Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. This Yisru Chag Shavuot Tavshin Pei Beit is Daf Tzadi Aleph, and we're holding at the last line. Haita Bat Yisrael Nifsala Min Akuna. So remember, we've been going through all of the various things that we made her life difficult with in order to be Mekel, because of the problem of Agunot. And one of those things was that she's going to suffer the fact that if she actually went ahead and relied on this aid on the basis of Bezdin's Rishus, if she was a Bas Yisrael, she will be forever psula to the Kahuna. He says, well, of course she's going to be psula to the Kahuna. I mean, obviously, Pshita, she has a din of a zonah. How could she not be psula to the Kahuna? Anything that is a Znut, doesn't matter whether, as far as the Kohen is concerned, it never matters what the reason for the Znus is. In other words, even if she had been an Anusan, she was captured by Goyim and she was raped, whatever. Still the halacha is that she's always puzzle for the Kohen. Zona in terms of a Kohen has nothing to do with her intent and the question of her mazit or shoge. So what to understand what the chiddush is. I mean, any idiot knows that. Says the Gemara, true. The point is over here is that the Mishnah afterwards added something really weird, that if she was a Bat Levi, she's also Mina Maaser, she becomes Posel, which doesn't even make sense. That's why we needed it, obviously, because who would have come up with an idea like that? Asked the Gemara, yeah, I mean, what is the deal? Whoever heard of such a thing? Bat Levi Mina Maaser Mibi Posel Biznus? And there's no din of a Bat Levi becoming psula from Achilat Maaseh, even according to Rabbi Meir, who held that we gave some of the dinim of the halachas of the kahuna, of the chashivas of Achilat Maaseh, and that just like Truma is miyuchad l'kohen, Maaseh is miyuchad l'leviya, but I mean, he never came up with an idea that we're comparing it to the dinim of Zayna and all the psula kahuna. So, I mean, what possibly reason would there be to say that she is Asura for Achilas Maaser? Something strange. Says the Gemara, of course not. But, I mean, let's first take a look at the conclusion. But, in Levimin Amaser, mi Mifsila, Vatania, Leviashinish Beit, Oshinivalabi, Ilad Znut, not Nimla Maaser, Volchavat. There's absolutely, she both eats Maaser, and we give her Maaser, even if she, Bedavka, went around and was sleeping with other people. Makes no difference. There's no psul of achilat maaser according to anybody. So what exactly is the reason for this? Omrif Sheshes, there is no reason. Remember that, look, I mean, what we want to do is make life tough for her. We want to give her all of these reasons to make sure that she is absolutely positive that her husband really died without relying just on hearsay. So because of that, we even gave her a knas. And normally, a truth is, we would have given this knas in general and say that there's a knas for znus. But, I mean, that's not something that is normally going to happen, that the rabbanu should have to create a knas for znus. I mean, how many women are going to go acting adulterously? So because of that, here, bedavka, we have the knas. And so the chiddush of the Mishnah, Enochinami, has nothing to do with kahuna. And it's a complete departure from norms by the Levia. And it is indeed a knas that we added here because of the 16 things that are chal on her for listening to the Eid Echad Api Bezdin. And it says, Bat Kohenim in Atruma, which is obviously also absolutely clear. I mean, how could that not be? If she's psul of the kahuna, she's obviously, I mean, she's psul even to eat Meiser, obviously she's psul to eat Truma. The Chiddush in the Mishnah is that Afilo Truma de Rabbana. Over there, you might think, okay, so maybe we weren't gozer on Truma Rabbanan, Kamash Valan, even Truma Rabbanan. And the next thing we said, Ein Yoshav Shalzev Yoshav Sazev Yorshim Ketuvata. Now, this is a little weird. What Ketuvah? She doesn't have a Ketuvah, remember? We said, Ein La, Lo Ketuvah, Velo, Belo, all of those things that she loses, Lo Mizanot, Lo Blaot, so what are we talking about? How could there be Yorish Ketuvah if she doesn't have one? Rav Papa, obviously, the halakha of a year has to do with ketuvat benin dichrin. Remember that in every ketuvah, there is a I mean, unwritten usually, but nonetheless, all the Tanaya Ketuvah built into the standard Ketuvah, which is called Benin Dichrin. Benin Dichrin is because of the actual Nusach of the full Ketuvah, which includes the Tanaya Benin Dichrin, the Al-Havilachim, Inoy, Inun Yartit, Kesev Ketuvatech, Yetra, Chukon, Yimachuin, and so on. So that any male children that I have from you is a promise to a woman that in the event that she predeceases her husband, then when the husband dies and his children inherit him, her funds are sequestered. And anything that she brought into the marriage are only given out to her own children from him and are not shared with the other children. And the purpose of this is obvious because we are trying to actually make marriage attractive and make it possible for a family to put into their daughter's marriage and not say, well, what are we going to, we're going to invest in her marriage. We're going to send things to her and buy furniture for her. And it's all going to go to this idiot's other children. You know, we don't want to do that. So what we want to do is we want to assure that the money remains in the family. So that is, of course, whether she gets the payment of a ketuvah. She doesn't get the payment of a ketuvah. Then the issue of Benin Dichrin comes as a rather surprise to us. I mean, you know, here she is. She brought all this stuff into the marriage. And then she remarries based on the aid and on Beis Din that says that her husband died. And then it turns out that he didn't die. So now her children don't get Ketuvat Benin Dichrin. So says the Gemara, but I mean, isn't that also obvious? Because if there's no Ketuvah, it means that everything of the Ketuvah is batal. I mean, it's part of the Ketuvah. When it said Einal Ketuvah, it didn't mean only the payment of the Ketuvah, right? It meant like whatever Tanaim are considered to be Tanai Ketuvah that don't even have to be written in. Says the Gemara, not necessarily. Because, look, remember that this entire idea is a draconian kind of knas issue that we're putting on her for no real reason other than to make life easier for her initially, that she should be enabled not to be sitting there in a state of igun because she doesn't know if her husband is dead or alive. But in order to make that happen, in order to make it possible for Beis Din to be seimech on an eid echad, which normally we wouldn't be allowed to do, we had to do all kinds of things like this because otherwise we wouldn't be able to rely on her own investigation. So the point over here is that in Achinami, we are actually doing something that is not really appropriate, except that we had no choice. I might think that Ma'adatema, Lididada of the Isura Katsura Abonim. And the bottom line is that there has to be some kind of understandable justification for this, right? So we're saying the understandable justification is the fact that she did not do a proper investigation. She should have been more medakteket that her husband was dead. I mean, that's basically how we're justifying this as a knas. So I might think that we're not going to be kain as her children. I mean, after it's all over, you know, and she's dead and the father's dead. I mean, it seems a little bit overdone to actually give the knas to the children as well. Kamashmalan, that's part of the whole parcel here, part and parcel of the whole package, I mean, because she has to see herself as losing out on all of the issues that were guaranteeing the future of her family. And that's all part of the draconian results of not doing a proper investigation. So Mao de Tema would have thought that we're only going to be kind of sir, but Lazara, I mean, why should we be kind of the children, Kamashmon, even this? Okay, the last thing that was, the last of the 16 items, was that Achiv Shel Zeh, V'Achiv Shel Zeh, Chotzin V'lo Miyamin. Neither one of the brothers of husband, either husband A or of husband B, are going to do Yibum. However, we do require Chalitza from both of them. So, if you want to think about it, I mean, the first husband's brother, his chalitza is a diaraisa chalitza. So, because he really was married to her, their husband. So therefore, when we're saying, when he's cholets, midiraisa, he's doing a chalitza. When we say he can't do yibum, that is a drabana. Because really, he's supposed to be doing yibum too. There's no relationship at all. There's no chiyuv of yibum. She never was married to the sheni. The whole point over there is that the Rabbanan gave this halacha to pretend that she was married only because of the same gezerah that insisted that there be a get. And that was because people might think that a married woman is yotzei b'lo get, which wasn't really true, but it was just part of making life miserable, as we ended up understanding. But anyway, but that's the case over here about the chalitza as well. So that just to make it very clear that what her din is and how it passes her and so on. So we were going there to do a chalitza. But when she shouldn't be miyabim, that she shouldn't be miyabim, obviously it's also for to be miyabim, totally. So it's not really Osir because we only Osir'd it. Not everybody even agrees that it's actually Osir. The lo miyabim, lo midiraita, the lo midirabon, it's absolutely ridiculous for him to do yibum either midiraita or midirabon. And the question is that it could very well be that there was also a Isser of being miyabim, and many Rishonim hold that. But not everybody agrees that when it says that there's no yibum, it means that, there's no issue of yibum, but they're complete strangers. So once the brother of the first husband would take care of the yibum issues, so then there's no issue at all. But as I say, that's a big machlokas. Anyway, continuing on. Now, let us remember what happened in the Mishnah. So we had basically four different shitas in the Mishnah. The first shita, which was the Tanakama, listed all 16 items that we've gone through now, and we finally got to the last one about the Yibum Chalitza. All 16 items apply. Then we had another three shitas that argue and say, well, most of them apply, but not all of them. And those were three completely different shitas. Because Rabbi Yossi, he said, look, I agree with everything else, but I don't understand why the first husband gets to not pay his ksuva. Why wouldn't he be chayav to pay ksuva? I mean, that's like a financial commitment. And now, obviously, if they're divorced, so then there's a ksuva. That was Rabbi Yossi. Then Rabbi Loza came along, and he says that the fact that there's mitziyata, her mitziyot, or her income, and so on, I mean, plus the husband's ability to be made for Nedarim, why does that figure over here? It doesn't even make any sense. I mean, the husband should be taking her things. Is that's good for her? That's not good for her. So he disagrees with that as well. So that was the third shita. And then we had Rabbi Shimon, who is the fourth shita, and he says that, no, Davka, the brother of the first wife, does do yibum. And not only that, Rabbi Shimon adds at the end that if she did go back and marry her original husband, there is no halacha that the child is a mamzer. Okay, so that means we've got four different shitas. Now the question is, how do we understand the presentation of the additional 3-day oath in the Mishnah? Are they saying different things and are they arguing with each other? Or is each adding to what the one before him said? So that, in other words, Rabbi Yossi would be saying, well, he has to pay the ksuva. And then Rabbi Eliezer was saying, well, not only does he have to pay the ksuva, but also he gets the right to the income that she has, and he still has the right to dafar sedarim. And Rabbi Shimon says, well, I agree with you guys, but I hold that the child isn't even a mamzer. Or are they actually disagreeing with each other as well? So is this in terms of increasing leniency, or maybe it's even in order of decreasing leniency? The Mishnah is not very clear. So when Rabbi Yossi says, Ketuvatal nechse ba'ala harishon. Okay, so how exactly do we learn this? It turns out that we have a machlokas amoraim about how the Mishnah is structured. So basically, each one of these Tanoim, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Loza, Rabbi Shimon, is saying a chiddush. Rav Huna, it turns out, holds that these chiddushim, the least of the chiddush was Rabbi Yossi, and the biggest chiddush was Rav Shimon. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, not just the opposite, that the most chiddush of all is Rabbi Yossi, who says that she still has a ketuvah. And the smallest chiddush was the fact that the child is not a mamzer. So we'll see, each one is going to explain their approach, starting with Rav Huna. Ravuna says, look, the Batrai are modu l'kamoi. So the last shitas, they certainly agree with the first shitas. So in other words, Reb Shimon is certainly going to agree with Reb Elazar, Reb Yossi. But Reb Elazar and Reb Yossi would not be moida to Reb Shimon, because basically the smallest chiddush is Reb Yossi and the biggest chiddush is Reb Shimon. Now, why exactly would that be? Well, I'll tell you. The way I understand it is that it's not in terms of the chumrah per se. I mean, it's in terms of what is most indicative of a comment on what it was that she did by going ahead and marrying without proper research. So therefore, I say like this, Rabbi Shimon. He says that ma bia, what I understand in Rabbi Shimon is that Rabbi Shimon is ready to say that you can even go and sleep with the Yavam. So, I mean, basically, the main issue over here was sex, right? That's the whole focus. So she went around and had relations with another guy. Now we're going to allow a relationship, a sexual relationship. I mean, like, that's what we were trying to avoid. We're trying to show that we don't like the sexual relations here. So therefore, if we're talking about Bia, I mean, you're talking about sex, and that was the main problem. That was the Ikar Isura. That's how the whole thing started. So if he says that even that you can go ahead and do, so Kol Shekein, these other issues that have to do with monetary questions, that is not as directly connected with the way that we feel she misbehaved. So you would think that the most or the least likely thing that we would allow her to do was to have any kula for further sexual connection to them. And he's ready to say, no, even that I'm ready to do in terms of Yibam. So then Kol Shekein, I'm not going to worry about monetary issues. But Rabbi Elazar, he would say, no, absolutely not. But look, I mean, you're talking about the question of who owns the findings, you know, which would include her lottery ticket, and that is all her earnings. That's just monetary issues. And we didn't put a knas on monetary issues because that's not what this is about. This is about marriage and relationships. But Bia, the Isurahu, I mean, that was the whole idea, is that we're trying to get her away from anything that would allow her continued sexual connections. That was the whole thing, was Bia. So I don't see how we could possibly allow that. Now, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar both would agree with Rabbi Yossi as well, because look, they hold that we did not make any knas on these kind of things, which are really things that indicate that they are married. They're all positive indications of marriage, right? In other words, if the husband is still taking her earnings, it's as if he's a husband. Well, really, he's not meant to get those earnings unless he's supporting her. And if the husbands continue to allow to be made for nedarim, I mean, it really looks like they're still married. And so on. I mean, if she still has a ksuva, I mean, it's, whoa. I understand that we're giving her all of this mama. But, even so, we're doing that even though they only apply in cases where people are normally married. And nonetheless, we didn't give them a knas because we don't want it to look like they're married. So Kol Shekein, I mean, the point of a ketuvah is that the ketuvah only gets to be hers when the marriage is over, either through death or through divorce. So, I mean, Kol Shekein, a ketuvah, which was Rabbi Yossi's idea, I mean, over there, that the fact that she has a ketuvah is just an expression of something that's over and done with. But all these other things that you're talking about, the mitzia, maisia dea, and further bia, and so on, all of those things indicate that they're married. So Kol Shekein, it would be no problem to take the ketuvah. But Rabbi Yossi, who only agreed that she gets the ketubah in his argument with the Tanakhama, that's the most that he'd be ready to go, because ketubah is on the way of the end of a marriage, right? So it's meifaku. She's going out of the marriage. So then over there, there's no knas. But all of the other things that indicate that she's married, there is a knas. So for sure, and Rabbi Yossi obviously is not going to allow her to be involved in Yibam, because that's even worse. That's similar to the whole point of the Rechuk. So in other words, what he is looking at is the connectedness to the concept of marriage. That's what Rav Huna is looking at. And if you look at it that way, so then we have increasing kulas of how far we're ready to go to make it look like the marriage is still, allow it to look like the marriage is still extant, you see. Masha Inken, Rabbi Yochanan, looks at it exactly from the opposite point of view. He says, no, on the contrary, the first chidushim for sure would agree with the later ones, but the later ones would not agree with the first ones, because each one, the Seder of the Mishnah, is the biggest chiddush is Rabbi Yossi, and the least chiddush is Rabbi Shimon. And it goes in that order, and I'll explain to you how I look at it, says Rabbi Yochanan. It's like this, that I believe that Rabbi Yossi would certainly agree with Rabbi Lazar, because he's saying, look, if he's ready to accept that there should be a payment from the man to her, which, I mean, that's very advantageous to her. I thought we were looking for issues that would discourage any feelings of there being a marriage, and her, the main point is, hurt her. Over here, we're allowing a payment of iksuva, which is a benefit to her. So, I mean, kol shekein, I'm going to allow what Rebbe Lozer allows, that things that the husband takes from her, that goes mididoli didei. I mean, for sure that's okay, right? Because, I mean, I agree that there's certainly a penalty to her involved in this, in the sense that if the husband is not able to get her surprise betzias or her earnings, that is much more likely to generate all kinds of anger in the marriage and so on. I understand that that's true. But basically, I mean, we're saying that she has to give away something that's hers. I mean, that's much more likely that we would be matir. So, okay, Rabbi Lezer does not agree with Rabbi Yossi, because he says, look, I'm only ready to take things from her and give them away to her husband. But, I mean, to say that she should get iksuva, absolutely not. We're trying to take away things from her, aren't we? And on the other hand, I would say that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Lezer would agree with Rabbi Shimon. Because, I mean, if they hold that even those in Yonim, the right to her mitzia, and the right to her own work, that is things, or how far is the darim, all of those things which are there, even at a time when they're alive. So mechayim lo kansi, so that's while the husband is alive, and therefore more likely for people to feel, gosh, I guess they're really still married, and they might feel, you know, we have a right to stay together and so on. So, I mean, if the husband's already dead, and what we're talking about over here is the yavam, I mean, what do I care if it's sex? That's nothing to do with it. I mean, what we're trying to look at is the issue of whether they look married or not. So, bia delachar misa lo kol sheken, I mean, what's the point? I mean, over here, where there's the yavam, whatever the yavam does, it's certainly not going to affect her relationship with her husband. He is dead and gone. So why in the world would we not be matirit? On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon would never agree to what they were saying, Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yossi. He would say, look, I mean, the husband's dead. Why in the world should we continue this knas where there's no point? It's overs. I mean, so there I allow the yana, and I insist, in fact, that there is a chiyuv of yibum. But I agree that, of course, I agree with the Tanakhama, that, of course, we still need to maintain all of these knasot as long as the husband is still alive. And there, avalhani demichayim, would indeed be still a knas. So the Mishnah definitely is four different shitas. And the only machlokas over here is in what direction do we read those final three shitas. Okay, and then we had the last piece of the Mishnah. Now note that it's very easy to misread the Mishnah, because what the Mishnah says comes after Rabbi Shimon saying, no, I disagree, and I say that there should be the Yibum, and that if the Yavam is Miyabim, that he's Matar even the Tzora. And then we have this other unattributed ruling, which says, Niseh Shelo B'Rishut, that if she did go ahead where it was without the Rishus HaBezdin, meaning that there were two Edim, So over there, she is mutter to go back to. Now, it's not clear whether that is actually Rabbi Shimon's statement, or was that the given by the Mishnah overall, right? So the truth is, as we're going to see, this was a third point of Rabbi Shimon. So he spoke about the children being mamzerim. He spoke about her right to go back to the first husband. And he also spoke about this issue of going back to the husband. So the correct way to read the Mishnah is three things were said by Rabbi Shimon, but that's not clear. So Rav Huna quotes Rav as saying, the Ha'achlocha is like this. So he said over the last piece, namely that Niset Shelo Bereshus, remember that Shelo Bereshus is better than Bereshus, because Shelo Bereshus means Al Pishnei Edim. So if she got married Al Pishnei Edim, so then the Ha'achlocha is that then she is allowed to go back to the first husband. So not only was Rabbi Shimon, the way we understand it, not only was Rabbi Shimon Matir the idea of whether there's a right to have Yibum, and not only did he say that the child is not a mamzer, he was the one who said that you can also go back to the first husband if she really was basically an anusa, because she relied on two witnesses. I mean, you can't get better than that to rely on, I would think. I mean, that's the one thing that the Torah says you can always rely on. So you would think that she's totally innocent in that case. Now that the truth is that we know that she's not totally innocent, because the way that we know that is that Mishnah says that she has to bring a korban. I mean, if she were totally innocent, she would have a din of an anusa, not of a shogeget, right? So a shogeget brings a korban, but an anusa doesn't bring a korban. The Torah is only mechayev of a korban when there is a level of responsibility, of course. So it's not necessarily so obvious that there's nothing to discuss here. And as it turns out, there definitely is something to discuss, and it turns out that the Rabbanan apparently do not agree with Rabbi Shimon about this last thing, that she'd be allowed to go back to her husband. But let's take a look at this slowly. We first hear Rav Huna Amar Rav saying that the halacha is that if she got married on the basis of two eidim, she can go back to the original husband. Omar Le Rav Nachman, I don't like the sneakiness, okay? What's this all sneaking about? And pretending that you're saying this halacha in the name of Rav, and we paskin like the Mishnah. For God's sake, there is no we're paskin like the Mishnah. Do you hold of Rabbi Shimon? Because I tell you one thing, it's Rabbi Shimon who's saying this. So when you say Achi Hilchasa, you are trying to avoid the obvious problem of paskining like a Das Yochid. Because the reality is, now you're saying halacha k'Rabbi Shimon, and you're pretending, well, yeah, that's not halacha. You know, the Mishnah said that. That's bull. The Mishnah didn't say that, okay? Because in reality, if you're going to be honest, you hold a Rabbi Shimon, then just say so, darn it, say so. Ema halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. Don't try to pull the wool over people's eyes. Because the reality is that what you said only works alibet Rabbi Shimon. It's not a statement of everyone in the Mishnah. The Shmaitecha, Kerebi Shimon Ka'asla, you're only going like Rebbe Shimon. V'chitema. Now, I know what you're going to justify your sneakiness. You're going to tell me, well, I couldn't say that look is Rebbe Shimon, because then it would imply that I hold like Rebbe Shimon, Lagabe Yibam, and Lagabe the children not being Mamzerim, and so on, and that's not true. Okay, fine. So you still could have been honest, and you could have said, we paskin like Rabbi Shimon's final statement, namely that on the basis of 2 Edim, that she could still go back to the first husband. Kasha. Well, I don't know why he was sneaking around. Okay. I understand that we should have seen it that way. On Rav Sheshes, you know, I mean, Rav Huna, remember, he wasn't saying this on his own. He was quoting Rav. Now, there's something wrong with this whole thing. Because, I mean, if Rav really said what Rav Huna said, then he must have been fast asleep when he said it. So, I mean, maybe Rav Huna was listening to him having a dream of some kind. Because, I mean, he must have been either falling asleep or fast asleep. But there's no way he could have said something so ridiculous. Well, what do you mean the halacha is that... Now, this takes the opposite approach from what we've just been discussing. What do you mean the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? I mean, does that imply that the Tanakhama disagreed with Rabbi Shimon? Did the Tanakam, in fact, disagree with Rabbi Shimon? Does the Mishnah hold that if she got married on the basis of two witnesses, that she would not be allowed to go back to the first husband, and the din of Teitse Mizeh Umizeh applies even to the case where she was listening to two witnesses? I don't see it that way at all. I mean, look at the Mishnah. And I mean, think about it. Does it make any sense? Halacha Michlal de Pligi? I mean, you really believe that the Rabbanan would have ossered her to go back to her husband? Let's imagine she was raped. Would she be ossered to go back to her husband? Unless, of course, the husband was a kohen. But normally, would she be ossered to go back to her husband? Of course not. So fine, so somebody jumped her. I mean, I understand. Isn't listening to two Adim basically that? Now, as we pointed out, it isn't really that. Because otherwise, she wouldn't be chayav of carbon. Obviously, there's no chayav of carbon of a woman who was raped as an eshes ish, right? But still. I mean, what exactly would you want her to do? My havi olameva. What should she have done more than she did? Two witnesses arrived. She listened to two witnesses. She did everything that the Torah wants her to do. So, I mean, really, I don't think it's reasonable to say that she is worse off than me. I mean, we could say she's a victim of circumstances. You don't want to say she's totally an anusa. Okay, so she was a victim of two Aiden, but that's almost as bad. And I want to show you, in fact, that this is correct, that nobody would have asked her from going back to her husband, because it says in a brayta that kol arayot shebatorah, in cases of all of the various arayos that we have, and of course, a married woman is an araya, one of the arayas, right? So if somebody takes an erva and tzirchot heben a get, you do not have to get a get from someone who married an erva because there's no chalos kedusha. There's only one case and one case in the whole world, but you get a get from an Isra erva. Where's that? That's the Mishnah in Yevamos, our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah says that an eshet ish that got married al pi beit din on one witness's say-so, that she needs a get. So that's the only exception to the rule that if an erva gets married to a guy, she doesn't need a get. Now note, says Reb Sheshes, note that the exception is identified as a woman who gets married al pi beit din, which means that there was only one witness, which clearly indicates that if there were two witnesses, that then she would not need a get, because we were looking for the exception, and this is the only exception that we found. Is Alon up? Because his eyes look suspiciously closed. I know he's thinking deeply, but if you take a look at his notes, there's a long line that falls off of the paper. Now, don't think we don't pick up everything here. Okay. So anyway, it's only al pi beit din, hu de boy gita, but al pi edim, lo boy gita. Okay, so now let's try to see. I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me, well, I mean, this bride, of course, could be true, but it could be true, Aliba to Rabbi Shimon. You're trying to prove to me that nobody would argue on that. I don't see how you see this. Maybe this is Rabbi Shimon. Well, let me continue, and I'll show you, said Reb Sheshes, that this bride is not said Aliba to Rabbi Shimon. Okay? Mani, who authored this bride? Imam Rabbi Shimon. It can't be Rabbi Shimon, you see, because Rabbi Shimon holds that even Al-Pi Beit Din, you also do not need a get. Because didn't we find that Rabbi Shimon Omer, Asu Beit Din Bahora Atan, a case where it took the Hora'ah of Beit Din to be matir a woman, which is talking about the case of Eid Echa. So they made that the equivalent of a Zedon Ish B'Isha, as if it was a straight out aware adulterous relationship, okay, that asks a woman to go back to her husband. And if, however, it was not al-pi beit din boratan, it was al-pi shnei edim, they made that the equivalent of a shigaga with somebody they didn't know that she was married. Now, I mean, that seems to imply very clearly that you do not need a get. I mean, why would you need a get? Somebody commits adultery, they don't need a get. So apparently, Rabbi Shimon holds that there is no gittin over here. So even though all of the other things are true, but Rabbi Shimon disagrees with the list of 16 things, because he says, I mean, it was the same way he argued about the other things at the end of the Mishnah. He says, you don't need a get, apparently. I mean, is that what he means? Idivide lo baigeta, right? So she doesn't get a get from the second husband. So then where does it say that she does need a get? Only where she gets a get where she was married on the basis of one witness. That's exactly what Rabbi Shimon says. She doesn't need a get. So, right? Because the implication was that there was this difference between the two Edim and the one Edim. So apparently, this Braisa must be the Chachamim, not Rabbi Shimon. Because the Braisa is saying that she doesn't need a get only where she got married on two witnesses. That must mean that the Rabbanan agree with Rabbi Shimon, that if she got married in the two witnesses, relying on two witnesses, that even the Rabbanan would agree that over there she does not need a get. So I don't understand why Rav is saying Hachi Hilchasa as if someone argues. I have yet to see any indication that someone argues. Says the Gemara, excuse me, this Braita definitely does not follow your analysis. The truth is, the Braita is going a little bit of Rabbi Shimon, and the Rabbanan do answer her, even if she did get married on the basis of two witnesses, and that's exactly what Rav was saying, but the halacha is not that way. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, and I'll tell you how to read the Braita, because what you brought as a raya that Rabbi Shimon held, you don't need a get in either case, is simply not true. Well, the way to understand Rabbi Shimon is like this. Asu beidin bohora'atan kikavanat ish bi'isha. You misunderstood the entire meaning of what that braita was saying. You said kizdon ish bi'isha. It doesn't mean kizdon. It means like you knew what you were doing. It had nothing to do with committing adultery. It means, if a guy takes a woman, not a woman who's married, he takes a pnuya, and he sleeps with her because he wants to make that his kedusha. So obviously she needs a get. And that would be the halacha, which everybody would agree. They made that when somebody, a bezdin, is matir, a woman to marry. So that's the equivalent of kavanas ish bi isha, in a normal case where somebody wanted to do kedushin, so therefore she needs a get. But they made a case in which the woman was relying on shnei edim, like a case where it was shelo bekavana, meaning that they did not have any intention of being married based on this. It's just a way to remember. It's not saying anything about it being the equivalent of ones or not ones. It wasn't even talking about arias. And therefore, in that case, lo boy get. So then that means that Rabbi Shimon would be perfectly in line with what you said couldn't be Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon would never hold that she needs a get, even if she relied on the best. And that's not true. He never said that. And that's not what this Braita says. Ravashi says, well, I agree with you that this Braita is definitely Rabbi Shimon. But I mean, I think you're misunderstanding also the meaning of the Braita. The Braita was simply talking about the idea. You're right, the way you understood the Braita at the beginning, but you're wrong with the implications. The Braita was talking about Isser, was not talking about get. So it was saying, Osu beidin bo ratan, kizdon ish b'isha, umitas ra ba'ala. Not that she needs a get, or doesn't need a get. It was that if Bezin gave a hora, they considered it to be the equivalent of a real adultery, and therefore she can't go back for her husband. Al pi edim, and if she married on the basis of shnei edim, they considered that to be the equivalent of shigagat ish b'isha, and she's not asura al ba'ala. But there was no discussion here about the din of a get. That's all. So there's no reason why Rabbi Shimon could not agree with the Braita. Ravina says, I think the whole thing is, all of your questions are ridiculous. There is no problem whatsoever. Do we not agree that when it comes to the chiyuv of a carbon, we said before, there is a chiyuv of a carbon in the event that she married with two edim, right? And the only thing that the Mishnah said was that if she relied on the bezdin, she doesn't need a carbon. But that was because makor came makor bezdin yafe, so that someone who relies on a court ruling doesn't have to bring a carbon. Okay, this brisa was talking about that issue, about the chiyuv of a chatas. So what Rabbi Shimon was saying there was, asu beidin bohoratan kizdon ish v'isha. Let's say that people actually mean to commit adultery, b'mezid. Is there a chiyuv carbon? No. So therefore, the same thing is true over here. When she relies on the bezdin, they made it the equivalent of intentional adultery. Not that in terms of any kind of chumrah, just in terms of whether there's a chiyuv chatas. Well, there's never a chiyuv chatas for an intentional act. And they made v'lo matya karban. Al pi edim, on the other hand. And this is simply restating what the Mishnah said. Al pi edim, if she relied on two witnesses, so then they made it a shogeg. And in a shogeg, she does bring a karban, umatya karban. And therefore, this has nothing to do with gittim. I don't know why you're jumping to conclusions that Rabbi Shimon, he doesn't hold that you need a get. Of course, he holds you need a get. And there's nothing wrong with what Rav said. It makes a heck of a lot of sense what Rav says. There was a machlokas with Rabbi Shimon and the Chachomim, and he's telling you, we pasca like Rabbi Shimon. That's all. Okay? Or, you know what? Maybe the first brisa actually is the Rabbanan. And the way to understand the words, chutz mi eshet ish, none of the arayas need a get except for an eshes ish. Put in one additional letter and everything makes sense. Put in a vav. Instead of reading it, except for an eshet ish who got married, al pi bezdin, read it, except for an eshet ish, or someone who got married, al pi bezdin. Meaning, except for an eshes ish with 2 eidim, or an eshes ish with 1 eid. So that basically the brisa said, both of them need a get. Thank you. So then it has nothing to do with Rabbi Shimon. It's completely Rabbanan. And all that happened was we had a corrupted brisa that the vav dropped. And therefore it sounded like one case. An eshes ish who got married, al pi bezdin. But that's not what it says. It's an eshes ish plus one who got married, al pi bezdin. Thank you. So now everything is great. Okay. All right. So we've got all of these different ways of showing that Rav makes perfectly good sense and that the brises that we brought to show that there was no machlokas are wrong for any number of reasons. First of all, it could have been the Rabbanan, and it was talking about the carbon chatas. It could, and that's nothing to do with it. And what we're talking about over here is a mixed, or what we could say is it's talking about a mixed up brisa, or we could say any of the other things that Rabbi Shimon was talking about, the heter of remarriage. He wasn't talking about whether you need a get from the previous marriage. And so let's go back to what Rav said. Okay, so Rav Sheshes made this big deal. Rav must have been half asleep or totally asleep. Doesn't make any sense. Forget about that. Makes perfectly good sense. Okay, he claimed that the Rabbanan for sure would have agreed that you can't asser a woman if she got married on the basis of 2 witnesses. That's the equivalent of being raped. That's what he said. Every idiot would know that. So what would Rav be talking about? Masiv Ula. So Ula says, your entire assumption is wrong at the core. Okay? This idea of what you're claiming, well, what should the poor woman have done? She is a victim of circumstances. All she did was listen to 2 eidim, and she has every right in the world to listen to 2 eidim. Okay? That's wrong. It's totally wrong. I'll show you. Mi amrina mai havi lala mevad. You are saying, now just I want to remind you where we are. We are in what appears to be a complete tangential pop-down. Because we're trying to discuss the issue of those closing words in the Mishnah. That's all we're focused on. And that was the last words that if she got married without Rishus, meaning that she relied on 2 witnesses, she can go back and marry her first husband, remain married to her first husband, and there's no problem. And the question was, is that only Rabbi Shimon Shita, or is that a machlokas? It's clear that Rav Paskin liked that Shita. And Rav Sheshes was claiming it makes no sense to say that that's an argument and that the Rabbanan would have argued with Rabbi Shimon because it just seems unfair. Someone who is a victim of circumstances should not be in a position of suffering a knas to not be allowed to stick with her husband and to lose both of her husbands. Why would that make sense? That's what he was saying. Now, we pointed out at the beginning of this discussion that does not necessarily follow. And that's why it's necessary to go through this, because on the one hand, the Mishnah did directly address the issue of whether one or the other needs to bring a korban. And the Mishnah said that the woman who relied on the two witnesses does need to bring a korban, which, as I pointed out before, that means that she is not considered to be a victim of circumstances. You don't bring a korban when you're a victim of circumstances. So the question only is, does it make sense to give a knas to someone who is a victim of these kind of circumstances? So we claimed, Reb Sheshes claimed, that it doesn't seem right. And Ula is now attacking that underlying assumption. What is that supposed to mean? It doesn't seem right. I am going to bring you many cases where it seems that someone is a victim of circumstances and there's nothing that she could do. I mean, we know there is something to do, right? Because, as we said, if there weren't anything to do, she wouldn't be chayav a korban. What was there to do? Better research. In other words, the same way that we expected the research on the case where the Beis Din gave the psak that allowed us to rely on one witness, there's no reason why the woman could not have actually protected herself against any kind of possibility that she would be marrying, despite the fact that her husband is still alive. And if she really cared, and she truly would leave no stone unturned before she would go marry somebody else, I mean, then we would expect that she would have turned up some evidence that he was still alive. I mean, we know plenty of cases like this. It's all over the world where people's spouse disappears, and God only knows what they go through to see if they're still alive and so on. It's all very nice to say, well, I followed the letter of the law, and I went to Shneidim. I mean, following the letter of the law does not mean that you're blameless. For Haraya, you're going to be bringing a korban. So it might also mean that you're not blameless, and the Chachamim felt you should have done a better job, and therefore there should be consequences. There's nothing so crazy about that. But what Ula wants to do is to actually show that this is a principle that shows up throughout the issues that we've been discussing, and that we don't say people are victim of circumstances when they are dealing with these Isurei Arayas and could have done a better job. So, therefore, says Ula, look, I mean, I understand that you don't like it, but let me show you that there is no such claim as, quote, my havi lalamevat, unquote. What could the poor woman do? I shall give you examples of what the poor woman could have done in other cases where we don't say such a thing. For instance, okay, we've got the Mishnah in Gittin. A woman gets a get, and the sofer had written the get. There was a takona on the get that you have to write a get to a local Malchut. And the reason for this is because since Gittin are considered to be extremely important civil documents by any society, they want you to recognize the social structure in which you are embedded in Jewish documents. So the Rabbana made a takana, you must write a date that is based on the local government in the get. So suppose the sofer didn't do that, and instead he wrote it to the Malchut She'inahogenet, which is the way that we refer to Rome, because they're called Inahogenet, because Bazuyata Ma'od, as Ovadia says, that they don't have a ktav and a lashon. It's a bastardized kingdom, so it's Inahogenet, right? They take everything from all over the world and pretend that they are the new panhumanists. So if you wrote it to that, or you wrote it for Modai, or Yovan, or you dated it from the time of the Binyan Abayas, or you dated it from the time of the Churban. Or suppose you made another mistake. You wrote the wrong location. You said this was written in place X, and you wrote Y, or vice versa, Y and it was X. In all of these cases, if the woman gets a get, she went ahead and married on the basis of this get, then all of these dinim apply. So she has to be yotzei from both husbands, teitzei mizeh umizeh, v'chol adrachim ha'eluba, and she's got to leave. She has all of the 16 issues that we spoke about in the Mishnah. Now, what the heck was a poor woman supposed to do? I mean, she doesn't know anything about a get. She gets a get. The sofer gives her a get. I mean, she walks out of there, thank God it's over, and she goes and gets married. I mean, I understand what you expect of her. Well, maybe that's not called what could she have done. I mean, couldn't she have gone to a lawyer and have him look over the get, a lawyer in this case being a Talmud Chacham, and say, look, I want to make absolutely sure there's no problem with this get. So she would have showed it to him, and he would have said right away, this isn't a good get. But she didn't. So that's not a good raya that we don't have. Of course there was what to do. Okay, I'll bring you another case of Reb Shimi Bar Ash. Okay, look at this. The Mishnah also says, somebody goes and marries a Yavama, and based on that, the Tzora of the Yavama goes and gets married, and then it turns out that the one that was the Yavama, this is 20 years later, you understand, she turns out to be an islandess. So now it turns out that it wasn't a good Yibum. And now the woman who got married as a Yavama Lashuk. And according to Rabbi Akiva, this is an Isser Lap. So now suddenly 20 years later, she finds out she wasn't supposed to get married. So the halach, according to Rabbi Akiva, would be also Tetzimizel Mizev, Echolatrocha Be'ilub. I mean, that's insane. What is she supposed to do? My Havilolam Evad. Do you see that my Havilolam Evad is not really true? Well, that's because there is what to do. I mean, couldn't she have waited to see if the woman that was taken by Yibum turns out to be an islandess? I mean, it only takes 20 years or whatever. Right? So there was something to do, right? Omer Abaya, okay, I'll bring you a proof that we don't say that, right? Here it says, any erva that turns out to be potrot sorotehem. And so those were the 15 arayas at the beginning of the Masechet. If the Tzorot went out and got married, and then the Erva turned out to be an islandess, and therefore she wouldn't have patered the Tzora, and therefore Tetzei Mizeh Omizeh, the Kol Hadrochim Elubah, why? What the heck was she supposed to have been able to do? Well, she should have waited. So Tosis explains that the cases are not the same. It's not that we're repeating ourselves. Because in one case there's a Cheskas Heter, in the other case there's a Cheskas Yisr. So we needed to say the same thing again, that even here, she should have waited. Omar Rava, okay, I got another case to show you. We don't say, what in the world could a person do? Here's a case. A sofer, this is a nutty case. A sofer writes a get for a man to give to his wife, right? And he also writes a receipt for payment, because remember, the woman has to pay for the writing of the get. So he writes a receipt for the payment of the get that was going to be given to the woman. And he made a little mistake. He gave the get to the woman, and he gave the receipt to the man. And then the receipt, the man gives the woman the receipt and says, here's the get, here's your get, all taken care of in this envelope. And she gives the get to the man saying, okay, and here's your receipt, all taken care of and stamped by the sofer. And they each one gives the other one the thing. And then it turns out, oh my God, she looks at her get, and her get turns out to be the receipt for the payment. And he looks at his receipt and he finds out, oh my God, she gave me the get. So that means I never gave her the get. So now, now what can the poor woman do in this case? Oh, she could have opened the envelope and read the get, no? So, sorry, Satosis again here explains why this is not the same thing that we said before, because over here it's before the get was even given. Omer Ravashi, all right, I'll bring you another raya that this business of mistakes where there's nothing I could have done is not true. We don't consider that to be a reason to consider you an onus. Toshma, suppose the sofer used a different name. This is how Tosafot understands it. The guy goes by one name in one city, and he goes by another name in another city. And the sofer used the wrong city's name for the city. So he's supposed to write down the different names, and he did it. Or he changed the name of the city, and the name of her city. And this is not a kosher get. But why? Shouldn't we say, what is a poor woman supposed to do? She doesn't know that, I mean, the name that's in there is his name. It's the name she's been calling him for the past 20 years. I mean, she's supposed to realize he's got a different name in a different city, and the sofer should have included that name, or if it was in that city, should have written. I mean, that's, how is she supposed to know that? Well, she should always take her get to a lawyer to look over, don't you think? So this is even in a case where she did read it, and it does make perfectly good sense. That's how Tosafot says that even so. And this is a bigger chiddush than the one we said before. Omer Avina, well, what about this? Can I sub a get kereach? Now, you know what a get kereach is. Get kereach, it's a good thing that Barnea is in here. He's hiding behind a picture. He's probably not there. So as you know, these Kohanim, these Kohanim, they have very vicious tempers, you know? So they could end up getting angry at their wife, throwing a get at her. It doesn't take that long to write a get, you know. And the problem is, when a Kohen does that, he can't remarry her because now she's a grusha. He's really going to mess up his life. So in order to give a cooling down period for a get of a Kohen, we made, you're not going to believe this, we made the get insanely difficult to write. Okay. So this is called a get mikushar. So what you do is you write a line on the get or two lines on the get. Then you fold it over and you sew it down. Then you have one witness sign on the outside of the sewn piece. Then you write another line or two. You bend it over, sew it down, and have a second witness sign on the other. Then you do the same thing for the next two lines, sew it down, and you need a third witness. You can't just give a get with two. That's going to slow them down even further. So anyway, just to make things really difficult. And what happens is that if you left one of those sewed down folds unsigned by a witness on the other side of the fold, the get is puzzled. Okay. So now you give this sewn up get to this woman. And it turns out that there was one of the folds didn't have a signature. So same thing. What is she supposed to do? I mean, she should have brought it to the Beis Din to open it up and read the whole thing. I mean, what do you want? Anyway, Rav Papa, he had a case where a woman had relied on something that made perfectly good sense, and he said she's allowed to go back to her marriage after she had married on the basis of our case, two witnesses. So Rav Huna Bar Eider, Rav Yeshua said to Rav Papa, wait a second over here. How can you rely on that psak? We brought all of those rayas that my havila lemevad is not a good excuse and that she should not be able, therefore, to go back to her first husband. Well, said Rav Papa, I understand. We answered every one of those. We said she should have waited 20, 30 years to find out about the island is. She could have gone to a court and she could have brought them to get mekushert. I mean, we answered that it's not true that my heavy lala mevad. Ah, come on, says Rav Huna Bar Eider, Rav Yeshua. Vashnuye leka, well, it's, I mean, these were ridiculous answers. I mean, you know as well as I do. What should she have done? Wait 20 or 30 years? That's insane. I mean, I understand, technically speaking, but are you still tiny? Well, what is she supposed to do? Okay. Don't tell me that you really think these are reasonable answers. So on the basis of these cuckoo answers, you're going to go ahead and you're going to say, well, but I mean, the Gemara, after all, did come out with my Avila Lamevad, and therefore the poor girl, so we should allow her to go back to her husband. And on that basis, Pasak, he gave up and he did not allow her to go back. I, Rav Paskin, that way, but clearly he was going according to our understanding of the Tanakhama, and so on. Okay, so all kinds of discussions, but, I mean, Lamaisa, the question is that we end up, because she needs to bring a Korban Chatas, that we cannot say, my Hevel Olam Eva. That is not a strange thing at all, and that's how we pass it.